Danilana Kitchen talks about food. Danilana Kitchen talks recipes. Danilana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Danilana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctico.
And I'm Donna Pruskintas.
We get together here once a week at the studios of Community Radio, KHOI, in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. And we get by with some help from our friends.
Yes, the Danilana Kitchen Show is sponsored by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, go to www.themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Do that. Yes, we do. Okay. Welcome, welcome. So here we are in the middle of winter. We have slipped into February, which is a good thing.
Yeah, after slip is the operative word here.
Oh, slip. We have had a amazing blast of winter. Matter of fact, the Danilana Kitchen, first time ever. We called a snow day last week, Donna. It was a bit much.
Forget that neither snow nor sleet. Nor, even the mailman didn't have to work that. That was bad. Bad, bad, bad.
So we had a really nice reheated leftovers on the show, and I hope you enjoyed that show.
Yeah, and we just sat home by our wood stoves.
We did. On the Danilana Kitchen, we talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. So you'll get a little bit of all that kind of stuff. You won't find anything about the Super Bowl here today.
No, except the report overall, not having watched it, but the news keeps saying it was boring. Can you imagine that? What a letdown.
Are we as a country bereft now? How are we going to ever live with ourselves?
I don't know. I guess we have to find something more stimulating, more exciting, more polarizing, more, I don't know. Whoa.
Well, here, I got an idea.
Okay.
Today on the Danilana Kitchen, we're going to peruse some new cookbooks. That's good. Okay. What cookbook did you bring today,
okay,
Donna?
I brought my favorite new one, and Lana brought hers. And mine is called Ottolenghi Simple. Should I talk about that now, or you want?
No, it's the tease.
Okay.
And I brought a book called Genius Desserts, 100 Recipes That Will Change the Way You Break by Kristen Change the Way You Bake by Kristen Miglore.
It was good. I liked her book too.
We've been passing these recipe books back and forth, and we're going to also study and look into some ingredients. You come into a recipe book, and they throw these new ingredients at you, and think, I can do that recipe. But then you think, oh, what in the world is that? So we're going to talk about some of these ingredients and give each other the courage to try
new
things.
The new books kind of stretch you and educate you, and that's the point of them.
Oh, and I've got a few words about eggplant. Yes, I do. All right. But first, something from the Danilana Kitchen News Department. That's the Danilana Kitchen ticker tape. We have a news department. Yes, we do. I promised you many weeks ago that I would have a haggis report. And this is the haggis report from the Danilana Kitchen. I went to the third annual Burns Night Supper here in town.
That's the men in kilts evening.
Oh, Donna, it was so nice. It was elegant. It was lovely. There was all kinds of things and haggis. Haggis is a very Scottish thing. You can't have a Burns night without it. It even has its own poem, and it arrives into the dining room with bagpipes, and it is slashed open with a sword. Believe it or not, it was. So what's haggis? Haggis is a bunch of stuff.
What is it? Oatmeal and innards.
Parts, meat part. It's a sausage thing.
Kind of.
Yeah. Oh, the lungs and you wouldn't think you'd eat this stuff. And I must say, the haggis report this year.
And you have the advantage of having tasted it
Last year's was my first haggis tasting. I'd say this haggis was really much, much better. I don't know why. It must have been better because
probably the seasonings, that's what always makes the difference.
It was more savory. It wasn't just kind of safe. It was savory. And I know, myself included, but people around the room were having seconds of haggis, which is pretty good because.
So, haggis making is obviously improving art in our community.
So, there you go.
Aren't we clever?
There we go. The haggis report. Good job. Also, there was poetry, of course.
I believe
Robert
there was
Burns.
Whiskey.
Oh, there was a
scotch,
whiskey tasting.
Scotch, of course. Scotch tasting.
And they had little tastings of it. By the time
Scotch
I got
flights,
yeah, flights. I didn't get very fly on
you
my
didn't
flight.
Get flighty?
So by the time I got to my third little tasting, I was going, okay, that's a fine.
So a flight is when you have
a little taste, yeah.
Yeah, comparison tastings, mm-hmm. which in any ingredient, I would always encourage that, like chocolate flights and butter flights and things that ingredients that you taste. For example, when you taste several in a row, mm-hmm. you see the differences in or yeah. the qualities of them.
It was lovely.
So and we had a Scotch flight, huh?
It was a Scotch flight. Yes, it was. And that went with a really nice cheese board that had Stilton cheese on it. And that's one of my favorites. Stilton. Yes, it was. Okay. So that's
Which
my,
is not exactly Scottish, but
well,
it's very English.
Marcus, who was the master of ceremonies and the putter together of this event.
Right, he couldn't help himself because
right.
he is English. Right.
He did kind of slide some things in that, well, we don't have any good Scottish cheese, so we're going to have some Stilton. So we did, and it was
and
good.
Stilton, it's blue, right, mm-hmm. isn't
it's,
it?
It's a blue cheese.
I really like Stilton, mm-hmm. especially if you're not a huge blue cheese fan. Stilton is bearable for...
It was great. Mm-hmm. And there was bagpipes, and there was harps, and there was dancing.
Swords, apparently.
And swords, and good reading in Scottish dialect for those who would, and those who didn't, we tried our best. So there you go. There you go. Oh, and there were limericks made up on the spot to the haggis. it went from the ridiculous to the sublime, I tell you. All right. So tell us about this Otto Lynge book, Donna.
Okay.
Otto Lynge, spell that. That's one
O-T-T-O-L-E-N-G-H-I.
That's a name.
O-T-T-O-L-E-N-G-H-I. So there are multiple Otto Lynge books. I was trying to see. One of them is called Jerusalem, and it's another one is called Plenty and Plenty More and...
this one's called Otto Lynge. Simple.
And which is why I like this one in particular. I mean, none of the books are terrible. They really are, they kind of are like a bright spot. And one of the reasons I wanted this one this time of year is because this is a rather dreary time. You're not getting fresh things from the garden. You know, I mean, the citrus is coming in and, you know, you can go run out and pretend that you're living in Florida or California for about 5 seconds. But the Otto Lynge cookbook brings these really bright Mediterranean flavors into your kitchen. And, you know, when we think Mediterranean, people often just think Italian. But it's a whole area, including many more Middle Eastern and many desert climates and things like that. And so Otto Lynge is a restaurant in London that is, I believe... founded by a Palestinian and an Israeli pair. And I'm not sure. Yotam Otto Lynge, I'm guessing he's the Palestinian, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so what I like about this cookbook, it is divided into each recipe has either you can make, if you're looking for something to make sure, if you're short on time, something that is 10 or less ingredients, something that is make ahead, something that he calls lazy day dishes, and another one called easier than you think. So it's kind of based on simple skill levels, but really, really bright flavors. Lots of vegetarian and vegetable things in here, lots of grain-based and bean-based. And here's the tip on this. There are ingredients in there that you're probably not going to have in your pantry. However... in Ames, we have an international grocery store. It used to be called Pamel, and now I believe it's called Colorado Junction. But anyway, it's like on Colorado.
It's still called Pamel.
Oh, it's still called Pamel.
It's located at Colorado Junction.
Aha, there you go. All right. So it's right on Colorado, just off Lincoln Way, right?
Close enough, yeah.
Anyway, so... I believe the owner is either Palestinian or Lebanese, but anyway, they have all of the Middle Eastern ingredients. They also have all the ingredients you need for Indian food as well. So it is kind of the go-to for something that you, like, ingredients that you think you can't find.
Right. Now, see, I love cookbooks, and I kind of want to dive in, and then I come across ingredients that I sort of have trouble pronouncing, but I'm willing to try. Where do you find it? How much? What does it look like? How do I use this? There you go.
Well, and Ottolenghi is pretty good about explaining those things. And now you know we have a place where you can get them. Of course, a lot of this stuff you can order online too. Like even Penzies has a za'atar.
Oh yeah, Penzies is a good online source for
right
spice.
For a lot of things.
Penzies.
So
with
some
a Z.
Of the things that okay, so za'atar is a very common Middle Eastern. You can just sprinkle it on your yogurt, for example, or on your hummus, or, you know, on your eggplant or whatever. And what I learned from Ottolenghi in one of his earlier books, most of the za'atar, which is a spice mix that you can buy in a bag at Pamel or other places, it's Z-A-T-A-R.
Two A's.
Oh, yeah. It's Z-A-apostrophe-A-T-A-R, right?
Za'atar
or something like that. A lot of the mixes are actually made with marjoram. Not margarine. Marjoram, sweet marjoram, and or a little oregano and sesame, I think is the other, and salt, right? But real za'atar, which I actually once found some that it's an herbal shrub that is not quite the same as marjoram and not quite the same as oregano, but any za'atar mix will kind of get you there.
Same family. Garden alert. In this year's Johnny's Selected Seeds, honest to gosh, you can buy seeds for the za'atar plant.
Are you going to do it, Lana?
Well, I'm thinking about it. It's a real hot weather thing. I mean, it's like Mediterranean. So I'm going to give it a try. And yes, it is in that family, not quite the same thing. So we're going to see what I can do.
Well, we might be growing our own za'atar.
That's the first time I've heard that. That's good.
Another ingredient that they use a lot that I love is preserved lemon.
Oh.
And that is something you can make at home. You buy the lemons and you pack them in a jar with something like sugar, salt, pepper, a few things, you know, and you let them sit for like a month in the pantry.
It's kind of like pickled then?
Kind of.
But it's really lemony.
Yeah. But good. I also found a hack for that where you put the lemons in a baggie, a freezer baggie with the ingredients. Then you freeze them, thaw them. And then they're done in like 3 days. So preserved lemon is like a hummus. If you make homemade hummus with preserved lemon as the main flavoring, it's really good. So that's a very Middle Eastern flavor. He also talks a lot about harissa.
Ah, spell that.
H-A-R-I-S-S-A. Huh. And he gives a particular brand. I'll have to go to Pamela and see if they have it. He recommends the rose harissa. Now, I have also made my own harissa because it's a bunch of peppers, you know, kind of ground up. It's wet. It's a wet sauce. And what else is in it? Garlic, of course, stuff like that. But it is a very, it's like, harissa, what would we call it? The Middle Eastern ketchup, maybe. That kind of feeling. The other thing, now, this is a really easy one.
Okay.
Sumac.
Sumac?
So sumac is the deep red ground spice made from the dried and crushed berries of the sumac shrub. Now, that is not the sumac that we're growing around here, which I think is mildly poisonous, perhaps.
Well, it's irritating to the skin.
Okay, so don't be picking your own.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll check it out. Yeah, but sumac.
If you buy, you can buy either already ground sumac or grind your own. But it's got this light, tangy, lemony kind of flavor. It's red in color, so it kind of looks like red pepper or red pepper flakes. For example, last week, and this isn't from the Ottolenghi book, this is something anybody can do, I was roasting a chicken, right? Okay, a nice roasted chicken in the oven, but I covered it with a mixture of salt, pepper, marjoram, and sumac, and heavily on the sumac because it's not spicy. It's tangy. And so I just patted it all over the outside and stuck it in the cavities on the inside and under the skin on the breasts and put it in the oven. And then you get this almost lemony, bright flavored chicken popping right out of the oven.
See, these new tastes, new ingredients. How nice.
All right. If you pick one new flavor to try this month, I would say go for the sumac.
A little taste of that.
S-U-M-A-C. Yeah.
Sumac. S-U-M-A-C. Mm-hmm. A little taste of that during the doldrums of winter here.
And you can, it's very sprinkleable. You know, you can put it in your salad. You could put it on a savory yogurt or even on hummus. Eggs. It's very well known for eggs, right?
Does it dissolve or is it stay crunchy?
It kind of dissolves.
Okay. Like.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it just adds this really bright note that you kind of, at first you think it's citrus and then you kind of go, plus it has a pretty color.
Oh, very good.
So this is Ottolenghi Simple.
Yes.
And I know there are some Ottolenghi books at the library too, if you want to start with something that you don't have to invest in.
Now, the name is Ottolenghi. I thought the first name of the guy was Otto and his last name was Lenghi. No, it's Ottolenghi.
His first name is Yotam. Yotam Ottolenghi.
Very good.
So Ottolenghi. Ottolenghi.
Very good. Now, I went to recently, there was the Practical Farmers of Iowa Fall Conference was here, and they also have workshops. And I went to one called Eggplant Production. Huh?
We have to remind you, Lana is a very experienced vegetable farmer.
As experienced as you can get by making a lot of mistakes, and I do that too. So, went to this eggplant production, and presenting at this workshop, this would be good, there was Dr. A.J. Nair, he's the associate professor at ISU, working on sustainable vegetable production. And he talked about all sorts of great stuff they're doing with eggplants at the ISU Research Farm, all kinds of information there. And then we had Rebecca Graff from Fair Share Farm in Kearney, Missouri. And they do CSA to 100 members, and they do all kinds of – they have a fermented food business down there. And she talked about her experience with eggplants back and forth. It was so nice to have people that have done it in different ways. Now, I went to this workshop and kind of set up toward the front, and I thought, well, you know, eggplants are pretty – not too many people grow or care about eggplants here or eat them. So the workshop start. I turned around and the room was full. There were all these farmers back there. I recognized most of them. And yes, we all want to learn more about how to grow eggplants. And so we got all kinds of good information. For those of you who are flipping through seed catalogs now and want to get your seeds, I've had luck with all of these. And between the Fair Share Farm in Missouri and ISU Hort Farms, the suggested varieties are Dancer, a lovely dark pink, Black Beauty.
Pink,
At Black Beauty and Nadia, very, very dark black.
Those are the classic, traditional big,
classic ones. There's Ping Tung, which is long and purple, long and skinny.
Oh, Chinese, probably.
Or Oriental eggplant. Mm-hmm, good. Mm-hmm. And I have had a look, and I guess I'm a sucker for good names. I like names. There was a black or a dark eggplant and a white. There are white eggplants.
Oh, the white ones. And talk about a name. You know what I like? Rosa Bianca.
Oh, that's lovely.
Isn't that nice?
Now, these were side by side, and I just had to try them last year. Hansel and Gretel. Hansel is the dark one. Gretel is the white one. Hansel did great for me. Gretel, less so. But those are some names of eggplants that we talked about there. That's good. Now, one thing that all of these farmers, questions and the presenters all made, we love growing eggplant, they say, but nobody wants to buy them. Nobody knows how to use them. And
we're going to fix that, aren't we,
Rebecca
Lana?
Graff said, we figured that out on my farm. We have a CSA and we sell at market. Here's what we did. We came up with a recipe. The recipe is eggplant bacon. Now, if and
that's sure to sell anything.
Well, see, ears and
bacon,
pies.
Chocolate, bacon, this, yeah right.
They just everybody perked up in the room and went, "Aha!" We said we can do this, and so I asked Rebecca about the eggplant baked. Oh, see, we just went online. There's lots of different things that happen. So I went online, too, and I found a vegan recipe, but there's lots and lots of things. You crisp up the eggplant, and the whole thing is
fry it or roast it?
You roast it. Mm. Thin strips of eggplant are marinated in a mixture of smoky spices, maple syrup, tamari, and Worcestershire sauce for the ultimate savory, sweet, spicy flavor. And then the eggplant is baked at low temperatures for 20 to 30 minutes or until golden brown and crisp.
Now, okay, if they're only baking that long, it must be extremely
very thin. The pictures show, yes, you could probably at a distance think that way. That was baked. Anyway,
you know what, Lana, if you want to do a production of it, I bet I could use my homemade meat slicer, because
yeah,
we can slice
yeah,
really thin
like
and
that,
it goes
I think
really
would
fast
be very good.
Yeah.
Here are the ingredients from this one recipe I have, but you can Google it yourself or play around with your own. This that the marinade is olive oil, tamari, Worcestershire sauce, maple syrup, liquid smoke, smoked paprika, pinch of sea salt, pinch of garlic powder, and cracked pepper. You preheat the oven to 225 degrees and marinate. And then brush it on and then you bake for 20, 30 minutes. I think you'd have to bake it for a little longer than that, but that's okay. That's okay.
Oh, you're only brushing the marinade on?
I'd let it set a while, okay?
Well, then you'll have to dry it. Here's the thing about eggplant. It's like a sponge.
Yes, yes.
For example, if you want to fry eggplant, it will take more olive oil than you can, it's delicious, but ooh.
Anyway. Play around with that. The words eggplant bacon have given hope to eggplant growers and the people that are trying to sell eggplant. And I perked me right up, too. So thanks to Dr. A.J. Nair and Rebecca Graff, who presented at this Eggplant Producers Workshop.
Well, we're going to give a little more eggplant cooking encouragement here. One thing you can do, especially when they're in season and there's so many, is just cut them in half and roast them. Now, if you just brush them with or spray them with olive oil and roast them, they get very tender. I like roasting because it takes way less oil, which means less calories, And you get more eggplant flavor that way. One thing never do, don't stick the whole eggplant in the oven. They will explode.
Oh,
you have to, or you know, if you want to roast a whole eggplant, you'd at least have to poke it. Make a few holes in it.
Practice safe cooking practices,
yes, exactly,
out there, folks.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know, you won't get hurt, but it could make an awful mess on the inside of your oven. But they are so easy. Even if you just roast them in halves and then scoop them out and there's a Middle Eastern. What's that? Eggplant.
Baba ganoush.
There you go. Those things are really easy to make.
So, thinking of eggplant in the middle of the... This is KHOI. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about some new recipe books that we found, and we kind of got off onto the sidebar there of eggplant. Donna, the Otto Lengi Simple book, that's a recipe book that we've been enjoying. It's got some things to say about eggplant, doesn't it, Donna?
Yeah, I was just going to look in the index and read to you some of the suggestive titles so that you can kind of think of things to do with eggplant. Bulgur with tomato, eggplant, and lemon yogurt. Pork with ginger, green onions, and eggplants. Pui lentils with eggplants and stew. And another lentil with eggplant, tomatoes, and yogurt. I'm going to try this one. Roasted eggplant with anchovies. That looks good. And roasted eggplant with curried yogurt. So it goes in so many different directions. And it's a very... People love it as a vegetarian dinner because it has this kind of thick, substantial, almost meaty quality.
Yeah, you can do a lot with eggplants. Ooh, good recipes mm-hmm. to think about. Very good. Here is another news item that I've been meaning to share because this has been in the news recently. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-tick. There is a young woman that just won't be quiet, and she's been in the news lately. Her name is Greta Thunberg. She's Swedish, and she's all of 16 years old. There is has been a meeting of very, very rich people in Davos, Switzerland, and they're...
The billionaire class,
By the time they make whatever they do, it sort of affects us, and there's a lot of people that have been trying to get their attention. Greta Thunberg has been worried, concerned about her future and the future of everybody about her age. She's 16 years old, remember? She's worried about climate change. And because of her actions, there have been student strikes, school strikes all over parts of Europe trying to address the fact that, hey, listen to us. She's actually getting hate mail because she must be doing something right. Anyway, she ran a writing competition about the environment. That's how she got started. And then she did a strike outside the Swedish Parliament in August. And she's been getting all kinds of support, and she's very well spoken. This wonderful Swedish 13-year-old girl stands up in front of cameras and microphones with her long braids and rosy cheeks on either sides and kind of lets people know that there's some things to worry about here. She says there's this complaint that I sound like and write like an adult, but she says, why can't I have my opinion? This is my opinion. She says, I'm too young to do this. We children shouldn't have to do this, but since almost no one is doing anything for the environment, our very future is at risk, and I feel I have to continue. So, three cheers for someone who is constantly reminding us about the future. That's Greta Thunberg. Let's keep our ears open. She may be in the news again.
You know, there was another funny thing at Davos. There was some panel that had an English accent, so I'm assuming he was English, but he was a historian, not too old, maybe 40-ish. And so he addressed the audience of the panel, and he said, well, the thing I have to say, and this is as a historian, is that the only really important issue for you billionaires, you know, you're managing all these highfalutin plans and charity and this and that, and what are we going to do about this? He said, it's really simple, and there's nothing else to do. Pay more taxes. And then somebody in the audience kind of tried to rebut it and fluffled around. And then this woman who was also on the panel, who had a beautiful, colorful African, whatever the whole costume is, stood up and point by point refuted the man about, you know, what the concepts of the charity were even addressing was not even appropriate. And simple.
It's not
those that God's got to put more back into the pot for the rest of us, you know?
There you go. And think about what we all have to lose or gain together. Yes. So, we're talking recipes, ingredients, cookbooks, and some new tricks today. I'm going to talk about my recipe book that I brought in. It's called Genius Desserts, 100 Recipes That Will Change the Way You Bake. And at the top of this, there's the Food 52.
It's put out by Food 52.
What is Food 52?
Okay, Food 52 is a website that was founded by Amanda Hesser, who was and they're still closely connected with the New York Times. So she was a restaurant critic and then other kinds of – all kinds of foodie things. And then she decided to have her own company. And the website has won James Beard Awards, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I did go on it a number of times trying to figure it out. It's I think there's too much. They're selling homewares. They're doing this. They're having – however, the recipes on there that she picks are from usually – I mean, she's in the part of the world of muckety-muck, you know, foodie people. And so –
that's a category. I understand that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And this is true of this book, too. Some of the recipes – because it's a compilation of various well-known cookbook writers, some of whom are my very, very favorite. And so I would say that the recipe information on the – Food, what's it called? Food 52. You can sign up for their daily in your inbox, blah, blah. I already did. I'm not sure I'm going to stick with it. But the recipes are very good.
Oh, lovely.
And now, and there is a genius, it started from a New York Times column, Genius Recipes, where they pick something that's brilliant, fairly simple, very doable. And then this is the Genius Dessert Books. And I got to say, there's some super winners in there by some of my favorite cookbook authors. And the good thing about this book is it's like it's the best of compilation kind of things, you know?
Yeah.
I like this.
Don't you like it when somebody gives you something like this for Christmas?
Thank you.
Very good. Anyway, one of the very first things I tried out of this, it's called Nibby Buckwheat Butter Cookies from Alice Medrich.
Who is a fat? Her books are always fabulous. You can completely trust her.
And I've made this recipe twice already, and they go
much to my benefit.
I was going to bring some in today, and I made them for last night, and
we ate
them all. Okay, all right. Buckwheat. You don't think of buckwheat as an ingredient, but here it is. It's really good. One thing this does have as an ingredient is cocoa nibs. And what's a cocoa nib, Dennis?
Okay, a cocoa nib is because chocolate is made from cocoa beans, right? Mm-hmm. And a cocoa bean looks a little like a coffee bean. So a cocoa nib is actually just a cracked bits of the bean. So they're almost the same. Like, have you ever eaten a chocolate candy with a cocoa bean inside?
Yeah.
The cocoa nib is bitter.
Yeah. It's like a coffee,
and
coffee bean, but it's cocoa.
It's a nice little.
It's grown up. Grown
and, it,
up
you chocolate. Know, you don't think, oh, chocolate when you taste it. It's mm-mm. something
it's
else.
Good. So here's these cookies. They're refrigerator cookies. So you can make them the day ahead or a couple days ahead. They have to kind of sit in the refrigerator for a while. 1 1/4 cup all-purpose flour, 3/4 cup buckwheat flour, 1 cup unsalted butter softened, 2/3 cup sugar, 1/4 teaspoon sea salt, 1/3 cup cocoa nibs, and 1 1/2 cups pure vanilla extract. You whisk the dry stuff together and beat the butter and sugar until they're fluffy, 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 and add sea salt. Put in the cocoa nibs, add with the flour and the extract. And this makes kind of a wet dough. You put that on your counter. You may need to add a little bit more flour to kind of make sure. You don't want to overdo this, but you want to kind of push this into a log shaped.
Do you use like a wax paper to roll
yes.
it and make it smooth like that?
Yeah. That works best if you put it on a wax paper.
So you make it a log that's like maybe 2 inches across?
Mine, I make a little, I like little teeny tiny cookies. So, yes, a log 2 inches long or 2 inches thick or less. And I find I have to cut that log in half, put it on a cookie sheet, mm-hmm. wrapped up in wax paper or wrapped up in plastic wrap, and put it on a cookie sheet and put it in the refrigerator. It says 2 hours. I usually do it overnight.
Then that could be frozen, too.
Yeah, it could be frozen. So then you got these things to slice off. Heat the oven to 350. And
your slices are what, quarter inch maybe? Half inch?
Half inch. Yeah,
okay.
Because they spread.
Oh, okay.
These are buttery cookies, folks. They're good.
So
they're
then good. You want your roll even smaller, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd rather small roll. Use a sharp knife, slice a log into little rounds, and space them so they have room to move a little bit, and bake for 12 to 14 minutes. The buckwheat flavor is really nice. It's kind of a grown-up cookie, and mm-hmm. I'm going to play around with – I never leave a good thing. I'm going to nudge up the buckwheat in here.
I was wondering when we ate them last night, I thought – I wonder if you could, does it have leavening? It does have, right?
No leavening. It's just really simple.
Oh.
So you could actually put a little bit in and help it along, but I think you could handle more buckwheat.
So, okay, I wouldn't. Okay, so it's 1.5 cups, 1.25 cups of flour and 3/4 cups of buckwheat. What if you...
Split the difference at the very least.
Yeah.
See, already we're tearing things apart and putting them back together.
Yeah, we're ready. From the Donna Lana Test Kitchen.
We will
let you know.
Anyway, the cocoa nibs and buckwheat and, of course, butter make these really, really fine cookies.
And we had dinner last night together with these cookies. And you know what we made with it? I took buckwheat honey and sweetened the panna cotta, which is basically a concoction of half and half and gelatin, right? Mm-hmm. But for the sweetener, I used the buckwheat honey, and then we had the buckwheat cookies with them.
Yeah,
it was yum.
Very good. I want to mention, and there's all kinds of other recipes that we will be dipping into in the future, and other ingredients we will be dipping into in the future. Yes. Another one I made that I really enjoyed, but I'm going to have to play around with that one, is a sesame seed cookie sprinkled with salt. And I have to make that recipe again before I wouldn't share that. I want to mention that you're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking genius desserts from a fine recipe book that I got for Christmas. And we're talking about cocoa nib cookies. That recipe, as soon as I kind of make it a few more times and feel a bit more confident, I will put that up on the Donna Lana Kitchen web page. You can go to khoifm.org, go to talk, go to Donna Lana Kitchen, and you can find past shows. You can find a picture of Donna and I, And there's recipes. That one isn't up yet, but it will be. There's all kinds of good stuff there. Some other interesting ingredients that, you know, I'm a little unsure of, and I want to try them. These recipes that I'm looking ahead. Dana, what's marzipan?
Well, marzipan is actually, I mean, people call it almond paste, and most people buy it, and the manufactured, I'm not a fan of manufactured marzipan, although it's a standard in, like, Northern European cookies and cooking, or even people, you can buy sheets of marzipan and, like, mold it around a whole cake in the color pistachio green or something like that. So it's used a lot for decorative things like that. It's basically, now there is a woman in town who's my favorite croissant maker, which you have to know her to get them, right? I think she lives in Story City. But she does make her own marzipan, which is basically ground almonds, sugar, and egg whites. Ooh. Now that is a different story if you're making your own. And I imagine with a food processor, it's not that difficult. But that's what marzipan is.
Ooh, that's good. Oh, we talked about cocoa nibs already. What about, now, sometimes these fancy dessert recipes don't just say sugar. They say turbino sugar.
Turbinado.
See, I got it, huh? Turbinado?
Usually.
What is that?
Well, there was a point in the hippie world where you didn't want to eat white sugar. Oh. But somehow turbinado was better, which is, it's close to, it's like dried cane juice.
Oh.
So it supposedly, it's less refined, but it has more of the mineral content. Like, so sugar is made either from, well, there's the corn sugars, like high fructose corn syrup and stuff like that. But cane sugar or beet sugar, that's where we're getting all the white granulated sugar. Mm-hmm. Some people prefer cane sugar because it is more traditional. Mm-hmm. That was the original source. Then brown sugar just has, it's the same refined sugar, but some of the minerals are left in it. So it's like molasses is often the product of the mineralized stuff that's pulled out of white sugar. This is not completely accurate, but chemically speaking, it's roughly equivalent. And then there are various other kinds of, it's all permutations of how much of the minerals you leave in and slightly different refining processes and things like that.
Huh. Sugars. So, since I'm going to be enjoying my trip through dessert book here, it's kind of nice to know what kind of...
Some of them are interchangeable and some of them are not. Like powdered sugar is its whole specific process that's very different from granulated sugar, for example. Mm-hmm. Or I tend to use... like if you need something that you need super fine sugar, it's just highly ground sugar and they usually call for super fine because they want it to dissolve very quickly in whatever you're doing. Uh-huh. So, for example, if you have, like, I usually buy the organic cane sugar, which is slightly more granular than the granulated that you buy at the store. Mm-hmm. But if you need it to dissolve more quickly, you just put it in the food processor and crunch it down.
There you go. All these things, all these little tricks of the trade.
Oh, we were also gonna mention the buckwheat because Cynthia asked.
Yeah, buckwheat.
So, they do have a bulk buckwheat flour at Wheatsfield, or if you go to Farm to Folk, or anywhere else that they're selling early morning harvest, we do have an Iowa buckwheat flour, which I think has a really delightful flavor, and also early morning harvest has the buckwheat honey that I used in the panna cotta. Now, buckwheat honey is kind of butterscotchy flavored, but let's call it an adult butterscotch. Some people do not like it, but if you like it, you really like it. And I have to say that early morning harvest buckwheat honey, which I think you can buy it at Wheatsfield and you can buy it Farm to Folk. You can Google it. It's Farm to Folk. No S on the end, okay? So you can buy those local products there. But the local Iowa buckwheat honey is really something special. In fact, the farmer, Earl Hafner, he maintains that a teaspoon of buckwheat honey keeps his arthritis under control.
So there you go.
Who knew?
So, new ingredients, and it, the courage to try new things. We'll kind of keep slogging on here and do that.
It's okay. That way you don't get bored, right?
Yeah. On our last show, we talked to Dr. Cornelia Flohr and about the neoliberal diet and the politics and the economics and all the stuff that makes up our food system. We have to learn to be informed consumers. And along with the theme of this show, let's learn to take that information with a little grain of salt. So, Donna has some information to share about some research, food research. Those are coming out with these statements about what's good for us and whatnot. But we kind of have to figure out how and who is paying for these things. What do you have to share with us, Donna?
We've referred to Dr. Chuck Benbrook many times because he is doing a lot of research into sort of agricultural chemicals. And he has a website called Hygieia Analytics. And he recently sent me this this study that he had done. He says, here's a quote. How did the U.S. EPA and the IARC, which is the committee of the U.N., reach diametrically opposed conclusions on the genotoxicity of glyphosate-based herbicides? That means, okay, glyphosate, which we have sprayed around us a lot because it is used extensively on Iowa crops of corn and soybeans, has become controversial. So this UN committee called the IARC has declared that it is cancer-causing or probably cancer-causing. However, the U.S. EPA says, no, it's not, right? Okay, so what Dr. Benbrook did is he went back and looked at the research that each of these organizations used to make their declarations and their determinations of, well, is it causing cancer? Because if it is, we better be paying attention and do something about it. And if it's completely harmless, then okay, status quo. So what Dr. Benbrook has recently announced, the number one key finding of his studies was, while the IARC referenced only peer-reviewed studies and reports available in the public literature, the Environmental Protection Agency relied heavily on unpublished regulatory studies commissioned by pesticide manufacturers. In fact, 95 of the 151 genotoxicity assays cited in the EPA evaluation were from registrant studies, 63%, while the IARC cited 100% public literature sources. So the difference is the EPA drew their conclusions from the science by the people who were selling the product.
There you go.
Whereas the IARC,
the UN folks,
yeah, used only publicly generated science from people with no money invested in this picture here. Okay, so hello. Just keep that in mind when you hear about this controversy of why the UN is saying it's carcinogenic and why our very own EPA is saying no, it's not.
So it kind of depends on who's paying the bills. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Well, thanks for sharing that information. That's one of those grain of salt, heads up sort of things. Yes, it is. Ha! In other news, I found this in a local paper, and this is something that Donna and I should definitely look into when the snow melts later this spring. There is a little cafe, a historic cafe, on the Lincoln Highway over by Colo, Iowa, that is east of here. It's called the Nylon Cafe, and this little roadside motor inn next to it. Every time I've gone by there, it's been closed up. It's kind of a historic site. I've actually stopped and pressed my nose against the
Is it
the
east
door.
Of Colo or west?
I don't remember. But here's some news. Someone is actually going to take over that little space and turn it back into a restaurant and motel. A couple from Ogden.
On the Lincoln Highway. Okay.
It's on the Lincoln Highway. It's when traveling on the Lincoln Highway was a big deal, and this little restaurant is a remnant of that. Yes, it is. A couple from Ogden named Arlo and Charity Starbuck are going to take over. And yes, we know all about Starbucks. The real Starbucks is here in Central Iowa. The real Starbucks is a cafe and diner and place to get a really good chocolate malt in the summertime. That is in Nevada, Iowa.
Is it the same Starbucks people?
It is. Yes, they are relatives of the official Starbucks person. Yes, that's good news.
Oh, boy, another summer road trip for Lana and Donna.
Yeah, it is. And so we'll have things to look at here. And so the reawakening of the Nylon Cafe, I don't know if it's on a historic site or if it's a historic. It should be. I'm just glad that little restaurant is going to get a new life pushed into it. That's good. Oh, I have another thought about haggis, and I mentioned this to the folks that put on the Burns Night Dinner. We get together and celebrate the poetry of Robert Burns. I can't wait for the day when we get together. We have big to-dos and gatherings for things like Bob Marley and John Lennon. Let's have a music-based feast. Let's do that. I am putting that idea out there. I think that would make a fine
sounds
party.
Like a summer fun festival.
Yes. So we talked about cookbooks today. Donna, repeat the name of the cookbook that you brought.
Otto Linge Simple.
Yes, it is.
That's it's called Otto. Simple.
Well, simple. Mine is called Genius Desserts, 100 Recipes That Will Change the Way You Bake. It's brought together by Kristen McGlure, but like we said, there's lots of good recipes from lots of good people
and
in here.
And both of these books, I think we were drawn to them because they are quite doable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a you can do it kind of.
With a little help from Donna as to kind of figure out what some of these darn ingredients are, I'm willing to give it a try. Oh, here is an upcoming that I wish to mention this Friday and Saturday. There is a local show called Laugh Out Loud. It's a bunch of local people getting together and putting on a comedy show. And that will be at the Unity Church of Ames, 9th and Kellogg in Ames, on Friday, February 8th, 7:30, Saturday, February 9th, 7:30. For more information, go to Clark Ford, that's CFFORD at iastate.edu. Yeah, just think, people get together and laugh.
This must be our people doing local comedy routines.
It is. And there is a couple guys that show up here on KHOI Community Radio called Tom and Doug. Tom and Doug are longtime producers of a great radio show called The Tom and Doug Show.
Oh,
and
they so do, this, they is do. A, this is a production they're doing, right?
And lots of other. It'll be fun.
It also says free will donations benefit the Access Women's Shelter.
Oh, very good. Very good. Lovely. Thank you for joining us today. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesday at noon. Here we do this live or repeat at 7 p.m. Or anytime you can go to khoifm.org. We had music today by the group Amaryllis. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering by Trey and Cynthia. It's been a dandy day here. We talked about good food. Eat good food and enjoy life.